Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
University of Mary Washington in this morning, and this is going to be a good one. World on a Plate is what we're going to talk about this morning, and we've got three experts to do that. Keith Mellinger is here, the College of Arts and Sciences Dean. Brooke DeLauro is back, the French professor at UMW. Welcome back. You were just here last week.
Thank you.
And Marcel Rotter is here. He's Associate Professor of German. Marcel, first time here for you. It's great to meet you.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
This is going to be a great conversation. Keith, I remember this from back in COVID times.
Yes.
Something similar to this anyway was done.
Yeah, that's really the impetus for this was in spring 2020. Everybody remembers that. one of the department chairs actually came to me and said, hey, I knew of this other university out in the Midwest that was going to do a free course for the public. And said, hey, maybe we could do something like that. And so we got the gears turning, and I started talking to the department chairs. And in, I think it was 5 weeks, we put together an entire course about the impact of the global pandemic on society and delivered that. And anybody could register for it. We had 1,600 people register for that course, ran in the summer of 2020. And what's interesting, though, is ever since then, every time we have an alumni event or community event, yeah, there's always somebody who comes up because it was all via Zoom, right? So my face was on the screen every Tuesday and Thursday afternoon, right? So people would come up to me and say, I remember you. You're that guy from that class.
And you have no idea who they are.
I have no idea who they are. And I say, oh, yeah. And when are you going to do that again? And that was the question I was getting all the time. When are we going to do that again? And, you know, that was a different time because people were trapped inside,
right?
And you know, people were telling me they looked forward to, you know, Tuesday and Thursday at 4 o'clock because they could jump on this class. It was something to sort of look forward to at a very difficult time. So it was hard to replicate that, you know, when you're not in the middle of a global pandemic. But we've been sort of thinking about it for years, and I approached Marcel about this a while back and said, hey, maybe we could do something that your department could lead. What would be a good topic, and you know, what would it look like? And so we sort of brainstormed about it, and then Marcel put a group of people together, and we got together and talked, and that's kind of where we came up with the idea.
Yep. So, and we thought a food course would be very appropriate because everyone has to eat,
right?
And it's part of everyone's culture, and of course, you know, worldwide there are different cultures, so there are different traditions of food eating, you know, food taboos, celebrations. What do you eat for Thanksgiving or Christmas or for other holidays?
Mm-hmm. You know, if everybody has such a great interest in the topic,
mm-hmm,
yeah, yes, or if they, yeah, and if they don't know, they want to know more.
Yes.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I think food is a shared experience, so it's a way to build connections and understanding with others, and it fits in our department really well because of the cultural aspect, right? So by studying culinary traditions and the histories behind them, students can also develop cultural awareness and empathy for others and broader perspectives on the world as a whole, not just on food, but using food as an entree to do that. No pun intended.
Has this been fun to put together compared to, not that a normal class isn't fun in some sense, but this just seems kind of so out of the ordinary.
Oh yeah, it wasn't that we didn't have enough material. We had actually too much material, and we tried to cut back to cover still all the things we wanted to cover. So that was actually the difficult part.
Yeah. So Marcel and Brooke, especially in your individual areas, you must have a lot of knowledge even before you got started on this.
Well, yeah, we both are traveling a lot, you know. I'm in constantly in Germany. I just returned 2 days ago from Germany again, and I travel with students to Austria. Next spring break, we want to actually add a course component on food in Austria and in Hungary, where we're also going. and talk about that. You know, go to the farmer's markets there. We are going to a vineyard, you know, and see how wine is grown, you know, and all those things we want to tell our students about too.
I think in my summer class abroad, and then also more recently on a class on campus, I always do, well, abroad I can do a wine and cheese tasting. On campus I did a cheese tasting, but it's always interesting. You know, I'm a very adventurous eater, but the students aren't always, and it's hard to kind of convince them. But in this class I taught this spring, I had a student who was raised in French-speaking Africa partially, then in France, both before he moved to the U.S. for high school. And among all the students, it was he who was the most taken by the cheese tasting. He was like, you know, I always turn my nose up at it. My mom was always frustrated with me, but I love this. And he liked the stinkiest of them all, you know. Yeah. And so you never know. And then he was like, I'm gonna go back to France this summer, and I'm going to try all the cheeses I can. So yeah. I think it just gets them excited in a way that they, and he was really the least likely candidate, honestly, among all the students. Because I knew he was familiar with it at some level, but apparently he just poo-pooed it. It was a great turnaround.
So Keith, what are some of the particulars here? What do people need to know about signing up in all
right.
that kind of stuff?
So students can register just like a regular course. So students know what to do. But if somebody from the public wants to join for the lectures, they're welcome to do so. Probably the easiest thing to do is to go to alumni.umw.edu. That's our advancements and the alumni relations office website, alumni.umw.edu. And on that site, there's an events calendar. So you just click on the events calendar and you'll see World on a Plate. And you click on there and there's a registration link and you just sign up. And then you'll get an email from Marcel or me or Brooke just giving them the link to join the class and go from there. And
it's there's five weeks.
Frankly, there's no deadline. I mean, you can sign up whenever you like. You know, it's just if you want to make sure you get the link, I would give it at least a couple days in advance.
Okay. So it starts June 22nd.
The first week of course starts. Yep. That's right.
So we'll take a quick break and come back. World on a Plate is our focus this morning. A UMW class this summer begins June 22nd. More coming up on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. You can access all episodes of Town Talk online at newstalk1230.net or on your favorite podcast streaming platform. Now, back to your host, Ted Schubel.
World on a Plate is our focus this morning, a UMW course this summer. Keith, Brooke, and Marcel here from UMW to talk about it. Begins June the 22nd, and Keith, you got us through some of the initial sign up on this. Alumni.umw.edu if you're not a student. And it's free. It's free if you're a community member.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So regular UMW students can sign up as a regular course and pay for credits and take it like a regular course. But we welcome anybody from the community, alumni or Fredericksburg residents, anybody who wants to join and just listen to the lectures. I think it'll be a fascinating, fun experience. And so you can do that by going to the alumni website, clicking on the events link, and then you'll see World on a Plate as an alumni event. And you can just go in there, sign up, and then you'll get an email sent to you with the link to join for the online lectures.
Tuesdays and Thursdays at 1:00.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah.
Whoever came up with the name World on a Plate deserves a
boy,
big
let me
race.
Tell you, that was a big discussion.
Yeah. We had multiple names.
We had fun with that one. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I can't remember the others.
It's a great name. As soon as I saw it, I thought I might be interested in this.
Yeah. The topic was quick. We decided on the topic pretty quickly. Like the food would just appeal to lots of folks, but coming up with the clever name took a little longer. Yes.
Well, no, you think about food and people talk about being like an international language and all these kinds of things. And we all like to try certain kinds of food. And that's where this is. There's just so many, like you said, Marcel, you've got plenty of topics and things to talk about.
Right. Yeah. So we will talk about, of course, food, food celebrations, food and identity. You know, certain groups eat certain foods, you know, more likely than others. Also, we talk about colonialism, empire. Think about India, for example, and the influx of British food there, and vice versa, the influx of Indian food on Great Britain.
Environment, sustainability.
Environment and sustainability. We talk about that. Rituals, feast and fasts. No, the different religions with the different fast times. For example, famine too, you know, distribution of food, you know, worldwide.
So
and also
policy.
Right, food and politics, basically.
Yeah, SNAP and WIC and school lunches and things like that as well.
But there are a lot of things to talk about.
Yeah. Right, yeah. As I said, we had to cut back from what we wanted to include because it was just 5 weeks. Yeah.
And it's a popular enough topic that we have a growing group of faculty who have some knowledge or expertise about the role of food from all these different aspects that Marcel was just talking about. So much so that there's a group that put together a minor program at the university on food studies. So students at Mary Washington can minor in food studies.
Yeah, and I'm overseeing that program, and we have quite a nice lineup, everything from biology to sociology to, of course, our foreign language courses that deal with food and economics, you know, is contributing courses. So there's quite a lot of different aspects.
Yeah, very interdisciplinary. Yeah.
I think that makes it align really particularly well, too, with the public liberal arts mission, right? So it's interdisciplinary studies tied to real world problems, and I think that makes it all the more popular as well.
Oh, totally! All of a sudden, you've brought up all. I can see now, Marcel. First of all, why you're involved with this, but also just the various topics. They're endless out here.
Right, and students who want to take that minor can accent it in any way they want. You know, I had already a student sign up earlier this summer who wants to work for an institute that is advising food chains, you know, restaurant chains on their recipes.
Huh.
So, and she is already doing an internship there, and she wants to kind of do it full time after she graduates.
Yeah, I can see that if you did have an interest in that, to have this available, this food studies as a minor would be something that would look good and give you some background on this kind of thing.
Could be a biology major who adds that. It could be a sociology major. No? That it goes with a lot of
complements
majors, a lot of majors. So.
Yeah.
No, it's not. This is the kind of course too, especially as a summer course, that where you can really kind of, you know, put your toe in the water and learn a little bit more about some of these kinds of topics.
Mm-hmm. Right. I think it has everyone knows food. Everyone has experience with food, so it has like a low barrier entry point.
Right. That was me.
Multiple opportunities, as we've just listed, to develop that with, you know, intellectually in more depth.
And well, then there's something just about just the whole curiosity factor of having this. Mm-hmm. Either things that you don't know or things that you didn't know that you didn't know. There's as a summer course, this would be fun. This would really be fun.
Yeah, there was sort of a pivot starting to happen actually before COVID, but COVID just, you know, accelerated and amplified it, where students just don't want to come to campus and sit in a classroom in the summer anymore. They want to be able to have the flexibility to have a job and then still take a course. And so coming up with the remote delivery options was a big, big push for a few years, like figuring out what we can do. And this lends itself very well to that. We can easily deliver lectures and deliver content to the students in this kind of thing. And so it kind of lends itself very well to that sort of summer course kind of thing. And students are looking for something interesting and different to do in the summer.
Yeah. So how is this course set up? There are the lectures on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Yeah.
What else is it? Are there
Well, for students that are enrolled in the course, Steve, there will be also Monday and Wednesday will be normal courses for 2 hours, and where we discuss readings to also YouTube videos about street food, for example, or other food experiences that we include. Sometimes podcasts too that students are listening to, and then we discuss in class. So the, under the different aspects that we mentioned earlier.
Okay.
And students can gain a lot of different kinds of credit for this course too. Brooke is going to take in honors students, so there's an honors component. You're teaching it as a writing intensive,
yes.
So
mm-hmm.
students can get a writing. They have to take a certain number of courses that have significant writing in them, and this course can satisfy that. It also satisfies our diverse and global perspectives requirements. So it actually has a lot of things attached to it. So it benefits students in lots of different kinds of ways.
Is there cooking involved in this course?
Unfortunately not. We don't have the facility with that. We have two chefs that we invited who accepted our invitation. Danilo Orofino will be talking about his experience, and Joy Crump will talk about her, I think, sustainability. She will talk about it. I meet her after this show, actually, so we discuss the details then later.
Okay.
But yeah, and I hope that we can involve a little bit of a cooking demonstration if possible. But unfortunately, the university doesn't really have the facilities, you know, to cook. I would love to
it might be
that.
Videos that we show of them cooking or something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Marcel and I had this great idea how to end the course too, if you want to.
Yeah. So so the course will end officially on July 23rd, and on the July 24th, we would like to get together with those listeners or those students who are local in the Fredericksburg area to come together actually at Foodies and have lunch there together. So that would be a good finish, I think, of the course to actually have a meal together.
Yeah. You can put faces to
exactly.
What
yeah.
is it like to teach a Zoom course? I mean, I know teachers had school, you know, public school teachers had a huge learning curve for them, and I guess it was probably for everybody back in COVID days. You probably feel a little more comfortable with it now.
Yeah, I mean, it was a very difficult pivot, but I think it's safe to say, looking at you too, I think everybody's sort of gotten accustomed to using the technology, right? I mean, we were forced to, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so it kind of happened.
And we use it too to doing snow days, for example.
Right.
I taught my classes online too.
Yeah.
So
That's maybe one benefit of the pandemic is it forced everybody to learn the technology. Yeah.
Well, and with this, you're able to do something like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
During the summer. Yeah. It's not as intensive for either students or for the professors.
And offers them more flexibility too, of course, because if we're, you know, looking to the local community, but also perhaps the alumni community, they can tune in from anywhere, and so that really widens the possibilities.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing you would hope, and I'm sure you have had people who take a class and all of a sudden think, I could do this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And this is right here, and I can do that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. When we did that COVID class, we had people from like 8 different countries join the class. And usually it's because there's some connection to Mary Washington, right? My sister went to school there or something like that, right? And so they would join these classes. So we got this very wide reach with the COVID class. Got a lot of attention for that. And we got a write-up in a national publication for it, and all sorts of things. But it's we have alumni all over the planet, and so they get the communications, and so they think it's a lot of fun to reconnect with Mary Washington.
Oh, it would be.
Yeah,
and it's not just the delivery to different areas outside of Fredericksburg, but also the input from, not everyone actually will be in Fredericksburg who's teaching or who's presenting. You know, there will be people that are abroad, for example, or, you know, will be from the kitchens, I hope, you know, from our two chefs, that they met, if possible, broadcast from there.
Yeah, Now, that's what makes this so unique, to be able to have access to like you say, even a couple of local well-known chefs to be able to do that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Exactly right. Yeah.
So get to sign up, alumni.umw.edu, if you're in the community and are interested in this. It starts the week of June 22nd, Tuesdays and Thursdays. Is it an hour, hour and a half?
90 minutes.
Well, it will be 90 minutes.
90 minutes.
The actual talk will be probably more 45 to 50 minutes, and then we open it up for questions of the audience, because they probably have lots of questions.
Yeah, it'll be the, if you're familiar with the Zoom webinar environment, so you can join and watch, and then you can post questions in a little sort of chat box.
Right.
And then when the lecture is over, then the presenters can see all the questions. And actually, other participants can vote the questions up or down. So if you see a question you really like, you can give it a thumbs up. And if it gets a lot of votes, then it'll rise up. And so they'll answer those questions first. And yeah, it's kind of cool.
Yep.
For the public that's doing this, is there any kind of book involved?
Oh, I don't know.
Not really. I mean, we could probably make available what we have. We read mostly excerpts of a number of books.
So they're just on Google Docs and hyperlinked. But we could probably make that link public as well. It's on the syllabus currently for the students, but certainly that could be made public.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is a great opportunity for the community.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it kind of gives some insight.
To jump inside, yeah.
And as to your point too, it's a great that it's not just the students being available to access it from anywhere, but bringing in the lived experience, right, from the community, from wherever they may come from, on farming, cooking, you know, sustainability, things like that, restaurant work. That's a unique opportunity as well, to get so many experts in one virtual place.
yeah. When we come back, we'll talk about kind of the weekly breakdown of what you're going to talk about, and delve more into the UMW online summer course, World on a Plate. Marcel Ryder is here, Brooke DeLauro is here, and Keith Mellinger here from the University of Mary Washington. Again, to sign up as a community member, alumni.umw.edu. Well, coming up on News Talk 1230 WFVA, it is just about 8:30.
From the Fredericksburg FreePress.com studios, this is News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station. Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. You can weigh in about today's topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230 and by text at 540-371-5756. Here's your host, Ted Schubel.
Good stuff this morning with University of Mary Washington, World on a Plate. It is an online summer course that begins on the week of June 22nd. Keith Mellinger, Brooke DeLauro, and Marcel Rotter here this morning from UMW talking about it. So we're talking about food. And Marcel, I'll start off with you, just as far as, you know, your experiences and likes and dislikes and, you know, where do you fall on, come down on all of this?
Well, I mean, I grew up in Germany, so I'm very fond, especially of my regional food. Germany, as probably most know, was for a long time divided into quite a number of small states until the late 19th century. So the regions developed really a lot of identity and have certain foods that you find mostly in that region, and other people try to imitate, and those regional people defend it. In my case, I grew up in Thuringia, which is famous for its bratwurst, brats, and fought a little fight with the Franconian people on the other side of the state border, who make different brats. Which one is the real brat? How is it made? The Franconians give you like five tiny little links. The Thuringians give you a long sausage. And what's the right way to make sausage? You know, that's one of those things. There are similar things about fish at the coast, or beer in Bavaria, for example, you know, which is for them part of their food group. You know, drinking beer for breakfast is not unusual, for example, in Bavaria. It's called Frühschoppen, which is a term that is referring to the early beer.
Yeah.
In the morning.
I didn't know that really, I didn't know that was really a thing.
It was a thing, yeah.
I visited the Guinness factory ages ago, and I remember being shocked by the fact that they said it was that Guinness is recommended for pregnant women because it's got so much nutrients in it.
Really? Right?
So yeah, we are apparently overlooking the benefits of beer here in the U.S.
I guess. Interesting.
Yeah. It's also not unusual in other areas of Germany to find, for example, people drinking a beer and having an ice cream next to it. So kind of doing it at the same time.
Wow.
Yeah. So the bitterness of the beer and the sweetness of the ice kind of setting each other off. So kind of then, yeah. I saw that on multiple occasions.
We don't have a lot of ice cream shops in Fredericksburg with a liquor license.
Yeah, I don't think so.
But again, this shows, as we talk about this course and about in just about the different the variances and things around the world,
right?
You'll be able to delve into some of this,
right? Yeah, I regularly go with students to, as I said earlier, to Vienna and to Budapest. And Vienna, especially, and Austria in general, has a rich food culture in terms of sweets, cakes, and baked goods. I like to call my course when we go there "Eating Cake for Credit," and because you know students are visiting the coffee houses in their free time quite often and enjoy the different cakes that are on offer there.
Eating cake for credit.
Yeah.
So, Brooke, I guess you go back to, I mean, you're tied alive, I guess, to France and French foods.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've always traveled a lot to France since I was young. Starting maybe in sixth grade, I spent every other summer with a family in France on the Normandy coast, and it was a tiny little town. So their postal address, because you know back in the days when we knew people's postal addresses and didn't email, had no number, no house number, right? It was such a small place that there were only however many houses. Her dad built the house himself. And we got a lot of local cuisine. I'm very good at trying things, particularly as a guest, right? I was trained to finish, you know, eat everything I was given. But there was like rabbit's ears that looked like rabbit's ears and pig's tail that was like a curly Q on my plate. And there was a lot that I really struggled through. Yes. I mean, there was a lot of other food too, but what I remember, of course, is those.
Yeah.
And I think for that, you know, I've had so many, there's amazing meals. There's a place in Paris that I always send people to that I probably discovered my junior semester abroad that, you know, I warn people to skip lunch because you're going to need a big appetite, which is not very typical of Europe, right? They're much smaller portions, but you want to be able to try everything, and it's a multi-course meal, and it's the cheese plate that you can't skip. They have, it's like a little house, a wooden house that has, in each room has a different cheese, and they'll give you as much as you want. You can try like 12 different cheeses. And it's just an experience that I always recommend, because I feel like it's atypical in the sense that it's so much food, but typical in that you get a little taster of everything. And that's probably my most memorable meal, I guess, even though it's not a place you can go all the time because you certainly can't eat that heavily on a regular basis. But yeah.
So you mentioned portion sizes. Does that vary from country to country, or is Europe or all kind of the same?
No, I think it varies, definitely. So, I mean, portion sizes in Germany are generally smaller, kind of, you know. Even the United States had smaller portion sizes 20
back
years
in the
ago.
Day.
Yeah, it's kind of, it has grown. Unfortunately, it's often quantity over quality, kind of, that in food that has risen. And yeah, but in European countries, we often find smaller portions.
And students are always surprised, right? No doggy bags. No,
yeah.
You don't take food home with you.
Oh, you don't?
No, and I wish, I don't know enough to speak entirely about this, but France in the last 5 years was the first country to really institutionalize laws about leftover food and catering schools, things like that, and they take it all to shelters, basically. So as long as it hasn't been touched by others, but even if it's been sitting out,
yeah,
if it's been under a certain number of hours, and those are the details I can't recall, but they make sure to basically reuse as much of the food as possible rather than just dumping it, which is the practice most places.
Okay.
I was in a former life. I was a German and Russian high school teacher, and I spent 9 months in Moscow in 1988, which seems like an ages ago. And that was under Gorbachev's first couple of years, and there were food shortages too. You had to stand in line every day to get your food, especially since the dormitory where I stayed at did not have a refrigerator. So it was in the winter you could put it on the windowsill outside and kept it free, but then like come June, it was quite difficult, and you had to basically go grocery shopping. Plus, the system in the Soviet Union back then was quite difficult because you had to go to the counter, stand in line, have your food weighed, like sausage, for example, or cheese. Then you have to go to the cashier, pay for that, and then you have to stand in line again and pick it up actually from that counter. So that was something that I found quite peculiar.
Wow, and you do that every day?
Yeah, I did that after school. I went by one of those grocery stores. Yeah, it took you like an hour every day to kind of get that stuff together. Mm. Yeah.
Oh. As far as food goes, do you have anything to add to the add Keith to this?
Any story I can tell is not nearly as interesting as what you're hearing from these two. When I was interviewed for the story that the university did on the course, I referenced the first trip I had to Italy with my wife. This was about 25 years ago, and it was, I believe, our first trip to Europe. And we found ourselves in a restaurant and picked it because we couldn't hear anybody speaking anything but Italian. And so we thought, okay, we're gonna get a good experience here. So we just wandered into this place and looked at the menu, and a lot of the menus in those big cities have little English translations underneath the entrees. This didn't have any of that. And so then we realized we're stuck. We don't really know what we're doing here.
Right.
So when the waitress came over, and she never really said much to us, so she kind of came over and just said something in Italian, and so we just kind of pointed and grunted, you know, I guess we'll have this, right? And then the waitress looks at me with a deadpan and says, you know, that's a cup of chicken broth. And I said, oh, you speak English?
We might have mentioned that.
So anyway, it was just a great experience. But yeah, we were willing to try whatever. And I remember discovering eggplant when I was there. Mm-hmm. I never had eggplant before that tasted this good. And I was blown away by the eggplant. I remember that was a big takeaway. And so I make eggplant all the time now. But I never had it that I liked it that much until that trip. Mm.
The sort of faux pas of, you know, misordering reminds me 20 years ago or something when my husband and I were dating. We met, I think I had MLA in D.C. and he had flown in from L.A. and we met up there, and I took him to a French restaurant because I was trying to convince him to try escargot, right? You have to try snails. I'm not sure if I really like snails or I just like garlic and butter, but either way, they're delicious. And so I just convinced him to order that, and I got foie gras, which I love, and it's usually sort of a spreadable on toast, except that what came was literally foie gras, which is this raw, you know, fatty liver, but it was like a liver cutlet. I don't even know what the word is, but it was like liver on a plate.
Yeah.
And I was like, darn it, now I've just told him he has to try something. Now I'm going to have to eat this. And liver has a very distinctive smell, right, which I do not enjoy. And finally I was like, oh, look, this is not what I thought. I'm going to order something else, too. I was like, I'm no more pretenses. I can't do this.
Did he like the snails?
He ate them all, but he was similarly disappointed, we'll say, in his snails as I was in my foie gras. He's mistaken.
So, I can totally relate, Keith, to your story. I mean, that's the story of my life. And that's why I've gotten to where I don't even like to try things now. Mm-hmm. If I know what it is.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, perhaps this course, among other things, you know, you become more, more brave.
I think it's easier to be brave if you don't know what it is. I think sometimes we should just withhold that information.
Yeah,
no,
I think that too.
Right. Well, right. But we also offer foreign language courses where you can actually learn to read that menu.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
There is that. Yeah. So the weekly breakdown that I have, food and identity, is the first week.
Yeah, so I mean, I think people often identify with, as I said earlier, with the region they are coming from. You know, I come from a region in Thuringia that has the highest meat consumption, even within Germany, which is already already has a quite high meat consumption on average. Thuringia even more so. So, and I know vegans and vegetarians probably won't agree with that, but bratwurst, for example, is a kind of a form of identifier for me too, kind of as where I'm from. Ritual we eat especially for holidays, certain foods, you know, each region. And in Germany, it is different, you know, where you're from. My family come originally from Silesia, which is now in Poland. And they eat for Christmas Eve, for example, carp and potatoes and sauerkraut. Yeah. So that's the thing, you know. The Thuringians, where I grew up, they eat usually potato salad and a sausage also, you know, completely different, but also a form of identity for you. So identity also becomes important, I think, when people move, when people immigrate, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, that's one of those things that they keep with them, because it's a very personal thing to do, you know, cooking at home, that reminds them of their identity.
Week two is a colonialism and cuisine.
So yeah, that's what you were just saying, right, about like what people choose to bring mm-hmm. with them because they're so tied. So closely tied to region. What aspects they bring with them from their local traditions, both cooking and recipes and rituals, mm-hmm. And how they alter or don't alter them to accommodate or adjust to their new location says a lot as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd also do a tour with the students in the off years from going to Vienna and Budapest. I also go with them to Poland, and we always learn in Krakow, which was the old seat of the kings of Poland in medieval times, that one of the queens came from Italy, and she brought all those foods from Italy, like zucchini and aubergine, also eggplants and other vegetables that were then becoming part of the Polish cuisine, because she basically brought them in, had them grown in Poland and popularized them there.
Yeah. So. Well, on week four, sustainability in ethics, because we talked about food waste and things like that. I guess that's where that comes
right.
in, too.
Yeah. Professor Kashef, Majid had a course where he actually deals with food waste, and he takes as example actually our cafeteria, you know, Sodexo Run, you know, and they actually take leftover food from there daily and repackage it for the food banks to be handed out there. So,
and I think that lets a topic like that allows students to engage in environmental science mm-hmm. and economics and mm-hmm. ethics in a more tangible way than talking about abstract policy debates, let's say, right? We can use real world examples and help them latch on to those ideas.
Yeah, and Professor Majid is a professor of business, so he talks from a business aspect of that. You know, there are millions of dollars worth of food being discarded every day, you know, in the United States. So, and is there not a way to avoid that?
And Marcel, like I said, that's the great thing about this course, that you're dealing with so many different topics. By the time you finish the course, you're going to have a much broader understanding of the topic of, you know,
right.
food worldwide.
Right. Yeah. It's not just about cooking. It's about distribution. It's about waste. It's about preparation. You know, there are different aspects, like a kaleidoscope of different aspects of what food is tied to.
Right. So it's no longer sort of limited to culinary arts, right? It's a way of understanding politics, identity, environment, globalization, all of these things.
Mm-hmm. Which is as mobile as we all are. Mm-hmm. That's such a current topic mm-hmm. and something that we all we deal with much more than we
right.
we would have in the past.
Right. And also the future of food in the last week, you also discussed what's the future of food. You know, will there be more and more people you see now just drinking a shake of some sort, you know, as a full meal, you know?
Yeah.
Will that be the future, that we all have like 5 shakes a day and that's it, you know? Think about Soylent Green, you know?
Sure, right.
Funny enough, there is actually a firm who produces Soylent right now, kind of under that name, probably not knowing what the film was, you know, that was about. Yeah, but also, for example, consumption of insects, you know, that's something that is floated by scientists, you know.
Yeah.
Is that something high in protein, you know, high in fiber, you know, should we eat more insects in the future, you know? Those are questions we are bringing up, you know.
Yeah.
And of course, there's the TV and Instagram side of the future of food too.
Right.
That change, that particularly among young people, is very popular.
Yeah. Food as event.
Yeah.
Kind of.
It is a world on a plate at UMW. It is a free course for the public this summer. Alumni.umw.edu to sign up. It begins the week of June 23rd through July 23rd, Tuesdays and Thursdays at 1 o'clock. We'll run through all the particulars when we wrap it up this morning with Marcel, Keith, and Brooke this morning. News Talk 1230 WFVA.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. Miss a part of the show? No problem. Just subscribe to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite podcast platform. And now, back to your host, Ted Schubel.
Good stuff this morning. World on a plate at UMW this summer. Keith Mellinger, Brooke DeLauro, and Marcel Rotter. He's here this morning talking about World on a Plate. Alumni.umw.edu. For the public, it's free. If you're in want to take the course this summer for a student, you can get credit, Keith, and I might sign up. This sounds kind of interesting.
I think you should, Ted.
I could just by taking a class. Yeah. I could say I'm a
you're a college student.
Yeah.
If you just navigate to the alumni page, there's an events calendar. Click on the events, and you'll see World on a Plate listed. I think the course represents kind of the best of what we do. It's very interdisciplinary. We have faculty from history, languages, business, American studies. I mean, it's just faculty from across the university participating. It's for the public. It's part of our public mission, and also providing a great interdisciplinary opportunity for our students as well.
And if you're looking for something to do this summer, It's not a huge commitment.
That's right. No.
A couple of hours on Tuesdays and Thursdays for about a month. And
hopefully some very interesting couple of hours every week for basically 5 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Well, and like you say, Marcel and Brooke, the fact that you've got other professors at UMW collaborating on all this, is there's just a number of people from another number of different areas all involved in this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we have so Kristen Moon from American Studies, who focuses on identity and access food access in Cuba. She teaches. So we talk about Keshev's class, Alleviating Food Waste, and she teaches We Are What We Eat. So she'll be speaking to us about rice, which you were just saying, Marcel, is the most
popular food,
In the world. And then an MIT professor, right?
Marielle Russe,
Who taught on the Arabian Peninsula. So you can see we're sort of covering all areas of the world, too.
Okay.
And we mentioned Joy Crump, and then Daniela Orofino as well from local restaurants.
Yeah.
Becoming to talk.
This is pretty cool. Alumni.umw.edu. Again, and you said, mentioned at the beginning, Keith, that you can sign up right up to the end, but you might want to give yourself a day or two because these things take time.
We're going to compile a list of everybody who's signed up and send messages out to folks to let them know how to join and give them a little bit of information so that they come in prepared, know what to expect. So if you could sign up a couple days in advance, that would be ideal.
It is a World on a Plate, alumni.umw.edu. Keith, Brooke, and Marcel, thank you so much. Have a great summer. Thank you for
thank
this
you
course.
It's great to be here. Thank
next
you.
Time you see me, I might be a student.
I was gonna say, that's right.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah.
That's it. Thanks for listening. See you in the morning.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. Hear the show anytime by subscribing to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite streaming platform. The Glenn Beck program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.